Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me. I forget his name.
Yeah. Well, he shows up so rarely. Mike Cosentino, beloved co-host. I kind of like that. You know, I miss that when you don't say that, Steve.
Well, you know, my memory, Mike, you know, I do see that you have eyeballs.
Visual memory is multitasking and visual memory, the first to go when we age. We got Tom O'Halloran this morning, don't we?
In the studio. And we don't have to wear our chick bud earphones. The earphones, folks, are green and pink.
The fashion first earphones. Yeah, exactly.
We claim that Tom saves them only for Democrats when we come in, and
I want to do this
respectable looking ones for Republicans.
Exactly. Yeah, he has to dignify gray ones for himself. But we wanted to give a shout out to the students and staff of New Visions Academy, where I'm supposed to be this morning. Actually, I'm supposed to be right here talking to Tom O'Halloran and Steve Williamson and chatting a little about local politics is our goal here this morning. But New Visions Academy is hard at work on Isabel Lacey, and they're being good for their substitute. Well, I know Tom has an education background. The two things he cares about most, water and education, is that?
Water, education, healthcare, you know, jobs and the economy. I mean, they all blend together. One doesn't work without the other, and we have to have that type of a thought process in Arizona, and we haven't had one yet. We don't have a coordinated approach to our priorities in Arizona.
So these things are connected, you think?
Well, I would think so, yeah. Almost everywhere else in the world they're connected.
Tom, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself? Because when I was down talking to folks in Camp Verde, there are many new arrivals in the Verde Valley. There are many younger people who haven't focused on politics in their 20s and now in their 30s are beginning to vote regularly and get interested. And they don't know about you, even though you were our state representative and state senator for quite a long time. And one of the things you did was represent the Verde Valley. There's been no one in the state legislature representing the Verde Valley since you left. No one living here, right?
No. In fact, when I first got elected in 2000, I was the first person elected from the Verde Valley since 1968. And then when I left for the last 6 years, there's been nobody that lives in the Verde Valley and represents us in the new LD6, Legislative District 6. My background is, I'm from Chicago. I've lived here for 20 years. I was a Chicago police officer for 14 or 13 and a half years, and served as a watch commander and a sergeant. And Tom Tabak's over there. He's a former PD guy.
That's right.
Then I went into another career. I became a small business owner and a trader on the Chicago Board of Trade. I traded government bonds for a number of years. Then I became a consultant on the integration of technology into financial institutions around the world. Then I moved out here to Arizona. I'm thinking I'd ride horses and hike the rest of my life. And about a year later, I found out that you have to actually use your mind once in a while, and you can't do all this physical exercise and not become a little bit bored. And so I ended up getting involved in local issues. Water was one of those issues that I started off in, and I'm probably known the best for longer term. And then I was asked to run for the legislature in about 1999, and I gave it some thought. And by 2000, I was ready to run and ran. And luckily, the people of this area said, we want you representing us down at the legislature, and that's what I did. And down there, I became probably water is a hard issue to deal with down there. There's no overnight successes. And so I dealt with that as much as I could. Also got past some of the first legislation on groundbreaking legislation on water planning in the state. The Arizona Republic identified it as one of the top 10 pieces of legislation ever in the state of Arizona for water. But I really got involved in children's issues, education, health care, and long-term planning on our economy and jobs.
Well, it's nice to know that some planning actually happens at the Arizona legislature. I don't believe a lot happens now. It's a reaction. It's reaction to whatever we'll grab a headline. Water's not very sexy until 10 or 20 or 30 years later. Then water becomes more of a sexy issue.
We went kayaking on the Verde River with Doug Gossick, who's the mayor of Clarkdale. And that is one beautiful river down there.
Yeah.
This time of year, the banks are lined, actually growing right out of the water are thousands and thousands of beautiful yellow flowers. So anything we can do to preserve the Verde River is really important, Tom.
Well, it's just nice having a local boy. You know, I don't know. What he just said is I'm still digesting. Nobody since 68. I mean, he's the only one since 68. Who carries? Do the parties carry responsibility for this? Is it Maricopa County ruling everything? Is it just a matter of numbers?
I think it's a matter of numbers. In the old district, we were kind of at the backside of the number equation because of the Prescott area has 120,000 people, and right, Verde right. Valley has 70,000. So it's a little bit easier to get somebody elected from over there. And a district prior to that, Flagstaff was the determining factor. This district is more balanced. The Verde Valley has more population than it used to have, 75,000 people. Flagstaff's still the center point of the district, but the main thing is that we get representation, and I've been known when I'm down to the legislature to represent my entire district, not just parts of it.
Yes.
But it's important to have a spokesperson from your local area.
It may be secondary, but it is nice to have someone who actually lives in the Verde Valley representing us. I mean, that's kind of it's been so rare in your recitation of the number of people from the Verde Valley in the legislature is pretty amazing. You ran and won office as a Republican, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And you're not running as a Republican this time. You're running as an independent.
I am.
Why are you doing that? Why did you give up on running as a Republican and move to running as an independent? There are certainly lots of independents out there. I was talking to them the last few days.
Well, it wasn't something I did overnight. I left the legislature in 08, and I stayed a Republican for at least 5.5 years. And in May, I finally decided that after watching what was going on at the legislature, watching this divisiveness that is a continual process, and nothing against you two good Democrats here, but both parties are at fault. What I saw was that the majority party was continually trying to keep people out of the conversation, people that are elected representatives of their districts. And I don't think that's fair. When I was at the legislature and chaired committees, I chaired the Natural Resource Committee and I chaired the Higher Education Committee in the Senate. I had a rule that everybody should be heard, and that when no matter what party you belong to, you represented 200 and some odd thousand people, and they are citizens of the state of Arizona, and your voice should be heard at the legislature, and your bills should be heard at the legislature if you want them to be heard. And so as committee chair, it was very seldom that I held bills, and I only held bills after talking to the relevant sponsors of those bills and saying, here's what I think of your bill, let's talk about it. If you still want it heard after we've talked, I'll hear it for you. But I might be against it. And you know how far that's going to get in committee, but you're going to be able to have a public debate on this problem.
So what happened to the Andy Tobins and the Steve Pierces? What happened to these guys going down to Arizona has this tradition of exactly what you're talking about. You went to the legislature like an Arizona politician. You got it right away. You saw that right and left talk down there. That stopped happening, 7, 8, 9 years ago?
I think as a nation, I think we're just learning from the U.S. Congress. I mean, as a nation, we have progressed to the point where, it's much more politically acceptable to stick with the party line and to say to people, these are my values and I'm not going to change no matter what. And that, the more that occurs, the less we have a tendency to move towards solutions that are, and the only way to get to those solutions are through bringing people together. The really important thing, I think, is leadership is not about dictatorship.
There you go.
Leadership is not about divisiveness. Leadership is about bringing people together and finding a way to solve the important issues that face this state. And this state has a tremendous amount of issues that it's facing. Whether it's education or natural resources or whatever those issues are, our long-term infrastructure, how that all ties together with the economy, it is critically important that people start to become aware that these 30-second sound bites and people, it's unacceptable for people not to work together. That is the bottom line.
And that should be unacceptable to voters. That my head's going to fall off. I'm nodding. So you can't see it on the radio, but I'm nodding so much. The
3 years now, it's never fallen off.
Okay. Yeah,
it bobbles, but it doesn't fall.
We want to say that it wasn't for lack of trying. The five and a half years he remained a Republican after he left the legislature was not for lack. You know, he lives in Sedona, right?
Yeah, I live right outside of Sedona. Yeah, I live in the back end of Red Rock State Park.
The Democrats tried so hard to get this reasonable man into our party, into that party. But so he went as far as independent when he saw what was, you know, when his head came up again and he saw what was happening. And certainly the growth party in the state of Arizona, 4-1, and at least these are fairly old, meaning like 6-7 months. Those are old statistics around in political circles. But independents registering 4-1 over Republicans and Democrats. So there's certainly something going on politically. And it seems like Tom O'Halloran, our guest this morning, is situated to at least tap into that, or at least feel it out that both sides, as we've been talking about, are unhappy with the current legislature.
Well, you know, I that's my history. You know, when I was at the legislature before, I had a history of working across the aisle. Because I truly believe, and it goes back to, Tom Tabak could appreciate this, you know, you go into a domestic disturbance as a police officer, and your job is not to separate people and to make things worse. Your job is to go in there and bring people back together again and resolve the problem. If I'm on a board of directors, which I've served on board of directors before of major corporations, if your job is if something's thrown in the middle of the table and says, and they say, this is the problem we have before us. If we don't resolve this problem, two things are going to happen. We will lose our competitive advantage, or we will lose our franchise, our business. And so, we need to solve that. And if there's 20 people around the table, they sit and look at the problem. Day one, they all have differing views on how that problem should be dealt with. But I can guarantee you that by the end of the discussion, it might not be that day, but within months, that problem is on its way to being resolved because people have the realization that without resolution, it's going to cost that company tremendous amounts of money. And it's going to hurt their competitiveness long term, and it's going to cost the taxpayer, in our case, the taxpayer or the shareholder, a tremendous amount of money because the longer you delay on solutions, the more costly they become.
And I think that's exactly what's happened. What you described is the state of Arizona. The talk about losing, we're the slowest recovering economy out of the 50 states, with maybe the exception of Utah. And the reason is, I'm convinced the reason is the fractured legislature, the wacko bills, the 1062s, the 1070, the failure to reach out to we have the huge country south of us, that New Mexico, California, even Texas, for God's sakes, is trading with at record rates, paces. And Arizona, for all kinds of reasons, and a lot of them personal. Between the people who make these decisions in Mexico and the people who make these decisions in Arizona. We're in desperate need of Tom O'Halloran, at least Tom O'Halloran thinking in the Arizona legislature.
Let's talk about some of the most important issues. Let's start with education. We often feel as Democrats that the Republicans, most Republicans have, and there are some real serious exceptions to this, have given up on deep support for public education, which most Democrats see as very, very important to our economic development here. What can be done? The underfunding of Arizona education is now nationally known, really.
Well, first of all, we need to make education a priority. It is actually the foundation of our economic development, our future. And if we don't understand that we need an educated workforce, then we are going to continue down this path of making this a flyover state of companies leaving California, of making it a state that people look at and say, we don't want to go there. We talked a little bit ago about image. Image is so important of a state. Now, whether it's those bills or whether it's our caring for education long term and our prioritization of it. But, you know, people, we are in this huge debate between private education, charter schools, and public education. And, you know, people have a choice on where they want to send their children for education. Some of it is a choice whether I use state money or not, or my own personal funds. Others, between charter schools and public traditional schools, are a competitive issue, because both of them are technically public education. But the problem is on the regulatory side. If you're a private school, you don't have to take that child that has a developmental disability. You don't have to take that child that has an emotional issue where they are problematic in class. In fact, you don't not only have to take them, you don't have to provide the resources necessary to deal with those issues. Public education must take those children. Even charter schools don't have to take them unless the people can prove that the charter school is not full. And a few other issues, or doesn't have the resources to do that.
Right.
That falls on public education. And the regulatory environment is, if you looked at the floor of your house, that's where the regulatory environment is on private education. Then if you came up about 3 feet, that's where maybe the charter school, regulatory environment is. Then if you went up to the ceiling, that's where the regulatory environment is for our public schools. And so, just like the business world, the higher that regulatory environment, what you must do, the mandates that you must take care of, if they're that high, your costs are going to be higher by definition.
Right.
And so if you want a fairer process, if you think these other models work the best, then lower the regulatory environment on public education and bring those costs down. But remember, as you do that, there are pieces of the process that are going to suffer. And so we need to take that into account. What do we want from our institutions on a traditional public education? Do we want sports? If we do, then you have to pay for that.
Right.
Do you want debate and do you want arts and all these other classes? If you do, there's a cost for that. And what part does the school complex play into the community? The gymnasiums, the football fields, the binding issues that our educational facilities have with our entire community. There's a cost to the community for that, and there's a cost to the state.
I know what you're saying, but it makes people angry. They say, I pay taxes for that. I pay taxes.
Well, and they do, and they should pay it, and it should be efficiently used by the schools. It shouldn't be squandered. But, you know, there's a lot of talk. See, I think that one of the biggest issues with Arizona is our leaders have a tendency to want to tear the state down instead of build it up. When you're a leader in the state of Arizona, you should be acting as an ambassador for the state.
Every minute.
And everybody that's down at the legislature knows that our school system is not as bad as people say. We know that the Sedona school systems of the world and the Scottsdale school systems and the Flagstaff, and I could go on and on, a long list.
Yes.
Do we have parts of the educational system that are, in fact, broken? Yes, but they can be fixed if you start to prioritize and come together and deal with it in a rational way. They can't be fixed if we continue to have this debate that's tearing education apart in our state and in our nation. And so, you know, I think one of the first things we should have is rigorous standardized testing. Mm-hmm. And why I say that is not because so much our students are competitive, need to be competitive against the rest of the nation and the rest of the world. And that's not going to occur without, you know, rigorous testing. Now, what's the testing for is the important issue. You know, what it's for is not to tell the student how bad they are.
Right.
It's to tell the student, here's what your goal needs to be in order for you to be successful in life. It's not for the to look at the teacher and say, you're doing a terrible job, even though we're not giving you the appropriate resources.
Right.
It's to look at that teacher and say, okay, what's going on here that's causing this problem to occur, that your students or the students in this school are not meeting the standards? And if we find that those problems are teachers, then we have a problem with the teacher. But most of the time, we're going to find that those problems are the resources that they're provided to be able to teach in that environment. But the most important thing, I think, for accountability in education is to make sure that we have these standards so that the parents know who to look to for a bad educational system.
Hmm.
And the people they should be looking to are the people that today, right now, because of the way standards are, we have the Ames test up until now.
Right.
There is no standard. There's no comparison of the Ames test other than schools. And we have traditionally in Arizona lowered the standards because we didn't want to have failure. And by lowering those standards, we have more A schools, but they're at a lower level than we start at the Ames, and they're not comparable to other states. And that is a great way for politicians to be able to stay out of getting in trouble. Well, we have so many A states in Arizona. Well, is an A state in Arizona the same as an A state in Connecticut?
Yeah.
Or an A state in Washington?
School.
You know.
Yeah.
And we don't have a way to compare that. But if the parents knew that there was a way to compare and say, look at the legislature, who, by the way, funds most of our education in K-12,
right,
and deals with the regulatory environment to a much higher level than Washington, D.C. does. So they are responsible for the conditions of our education system much more than the school board is, because the school board has to follow their regulations and get their money.
What I hear you saying is something that certainly is talked about in teacher circles, having research-based education locally. You know, do the testing for what we can do, what our students can do, and what they can't do, and then let's tailor instruction to those areas. And you know, fund the robotics lab, Tom. Fund the animation lab at the high school level. Fund the agricultural business lab that we don't have. Fund the mining. I mean, I can go on and on about the things that we don't have and that other countries have at the high school level. These guys are ready. They're ready to learn, and they're bored out of their minds.
We have robotic labs. In fact, we have some of the best robotic labs in the United States.
I'm in rural Arizona.
Right.
So yeah. I understand. They have
but
those. You're right.
You know, like Flagstaff just decided that they're going to spend their local money on STEM education, science, technology, engineering, and math. And they have become the first STEM city in the United States of America.
Oh, my darn.
They're going, but, you know, it's not just about funding's important. Don't get me wrong. And when you're last or next to last,
it gets more important.
It gets more important. but again, that the citizens of this state are going to have to make a decision, but we should have this discussion.
Yes.
You know, what is important today versus what was important 50 years ago? And what does the economy look like in the future? And I think the most important thing is how are our children, whether you're a grandparent or a parent, or an aunt or an uncle, how are the children that are in your family going to succeed in life if our education system is not competitive? And so we can raise the flag and say, I won't name the school districts, but there are school districts that are A school districts in Arizona, and yet they send their children to ASU or to a community college, and a third of those children have remedial education.
Oh, right.
Because they don't meet the standards and they're going to flunk out. Right. That is a waste of taxpayers' money, and it could have been resolved much earlier on in the process.
And the state legislature, I guess, has been in violation of rules and now has to give the schools a whole lot more money.
Well, you know,
money that they had cut before.
One of the things that I get accused of a lot of times is I was a big spender when I was down at the legislature.
Yes.
You know, and
hilarious.
And the fact is that we did spend money, but people don't say, where did you spend that money at? And now the reason I'm saying this is because I came to the legislature in 2001. There was a case called the Ledwick case, that was a commerce case that could have been resolved in the early 1990s for around $50 million. And I won't get into the technicalities of it, but the state was being sued by investors. The state said, we don't want to pay that money, so we're going to fight this case. And over the next 10 years, they fought this case. And what happens? Year one, I get in the legislature, and they say, oh, by the way, the court says, you, the state of Arizona, will now have to pay almost $400 million over the next 5 years in order to resolve this case. Well, what does that mean? We're going to have to spend money to resolve a case that should have been resolved for $50 million.
Right.
Secondly, when I came in the legislature, we had been an ongoing issue with deficient maintenance at our schools and who was going to pay for the schools. The courts again ruled that the state of Arizona had been deficient with dealing with this issue and said that it's going to cost you $2 billion over the course of the next number of years in order to resolve this issue that was put off again and again. Mind you, it was being put off during some of the best economic times the state had ever seen. It was being put off again and again and again. So every year we had to come up with $200, $300, $400 million to deal with that one issue year after year after year while I was down at the legislature. Now, by the way, they've stopped dealing with that again.
Oh.
They are Cottonwood School District over here had a capital budget of $1.2 million in 2008.
Right.
Their capital budget now is $200,000, which means maintenance is being deferred time and time and time again. And that bank account for deficiencies is going up in all our school districts.
So one of the problems, I guess, is in this sense is
Mingus and Cottonwood Oak Creek have capital budgets on the ballot, capital overrides, excuse me, on the ballot, which we encourage you here at Democratic Perspective to vote yes for the capital budget overrides that are on the ballot. Please mail in your ballot now.
But I'd like to make one more point, and that's inflation funding, which is the current lawsuit. Well, we're going to have to pay $317, $330 million, and that doesn't even take into account the deferred cost of raises for our teachers. Now, if you're a constitutionalist and you believe in our state constitution, you understand that our Constitution has an initiative process allowed for the voters. And when those voters vote, that is a binding process on the legislature. And the voters have voted to say that there will be some level of inflationary funding at the legislature. So during the 90s, that was not done. And during my time at the legislature, there were 2 years it wasn't done, but we tried to fund as much for inflation as we could outside of those times. And we did. And we tried to make up for some of the deficiencies, as I just got done saying. So, you know, and then they turn around and they totally disregard the requirement of the people that voted to make sure that we funded education for inflation. This is you can't talk about caring about our children and not caring about their education and long-term right. development. And if you talk about families, the best thing for the families of Arizona right now is to say to the families of Arizona, we as a state need to come together and provide an educational system that will allow your family to have success coming out of it and that your children's families will be successful because we provided a good educational background.
So it's systematically, in some ways, it's political and not so much partisan. It's an unwillingness to face facts and just when you have to pay up, you have to pay up. And by deferring things, it just increases the costs over time.
Well, just follow the rule of law, their own rules. Their own rules say fund for inflation, initiative process, and they said, well, that's the citizens voted for that, so we can ignore that, or we can find a way around it. It seems like the legislature works really hard to find ways around every initiative the Arizona people
One of the newspapers raised was the fact that in our district, past candidates and representatives have been extremely, extremely conservative. The far right of the Republican Party, the far kooky right of the Republican Party. But when you look at how our folks vote for all these propositions and stuff. Right. They're really much more moderate, and even some of the votes are, I guess you would say, even sort of liberal here. So the voters, on the one hand, when they're given a choice of issues, generally, you know, vote one way, and when they're given a choice of candidates, another one. So one of the people you're running against, or the person you're running against, Sylvia Allen, supported this sort of attempted seizure of federal lands, which are, you know, is our public land, by the Arizona legislature. The citizenry, when they got it on the ballot, voted against it heavily. But they, but people like Sylvia Allen and Chester Crandall, that she replaced, voted for this. And so on the one hand, people are being elected for issues that the voters in our district really don't support.
Well, it's probably worse than that. This is an idea that, first of all, nobody's done any analysis on. So if you're going to bring an idea to the public, at least bring the idea to the public and not have sound bites versus reality. And the reality is that there is no one. The governor vetoed one of these bills.
Yeah.
Right. The Republican governor.
Yeah. Right.
And
well,
she
it was too crazy.
And
Tom,
she,
I'm
well,
sorry.
It's not only too crazy. Let's say it could be done. Let's say tomorrow it could be done. What would you need to understand what that means? Now, my opponent says that that's the way we're going to fund education in the future, by taking over the federal lands and using all the money we get off the federal lands for mining and timber and all this other stuff. And well, first of all, Arizona is one of the lowest states in the country for royalties for mining. Secondly, we have to understand that you don't just say we're going to use these lands for any purpose. It's like the federal government's going to turn these lands over to us, and we're going to be exempt from all environmental regulations. That's just not, whether you want it to happen or not, that's not going to happen. And so we are going to be given the burden of dealing with it from a fiduciary standpoint, and there has been zero analysis by the state government to identify what the fiscal responsibility of taking over those lands are. And that was the number one reason the governor said, I'm vetoing this bill. And it has to go no further than that. Until you can bring before the public an analysis. These are the same people that say to the public, if you want an initiative process done, we want you to have an economic analysis of how it's going to impact the state budget. But when they want to put a bill forward, they go, well, you know, we'll find out later. Yeah. It's like dealing with health care. You know, we're going to do the bill, and then we're going to find out what it's going to cost later on.
Your opponent favors a uranium mining in the watershed of the Grand Canyon, right?
Well, it would be better if we cleaned up the 50 sites that are up there already that are contaminating our water. But yes, she does.
And she wanted to have a economic development consisted of having a toxic waste dump in Arizona at one point.
A nuclear waste.
Well, that's it. Sylvia Allen's Arizona is. I mean, that was one of the reasons that Brewer vetoed the bill. We're talking about damaging so many other going industries like tourism. You know, this is Sedona. We depend an awful lot on tourism, on that part, for our, part of our economy. All of the things, she would turn Arizona into an ugly China, environmentally speaking. Where I cannot imagine the environmental degradation if you can get around the federal laws, if you can get around as
all the lawsuits is going to generate.
It'll be 40 years of lawsuits.
Exactly. As it should be.
The adjudication process for water in this state's been going on for 40 years, and that's a minor issue compared to somebody saying we're going to take over all the federal lands in the state of Arizona, or say all the federal lands except state parks or national parks in the state of Arizona. Well, you're right. First of all, these are our watersheds. This is where our water comes from.
Right.
And secondly, we don't, if all of a sudden there's a fire today in a national forest, the national forest pays for that. If there's a fire tomorrow and we have the national forest under our state control, we pay for it. And we pay for the management, and we pay for all the studies, and we pay. So they like to talk about this as a one-sided issue. And it's not a one-sided issue. It's a multidimensional issue that before you go down a path, you need a comprehensive analysis, and that just, they want to talk in sound bites instead of comprehensive analysis.
I think one of the things that Sylvia Allen is that I think twice she's gotten to the Republican nomination, basically chosen by insiders in the Republican Party rather than in a primary, right? And I think that when you get the people over in Snowflake, for example, picking Republicans picking a candidate, you end up with a candidate like Sylvia Allen, rather than if you had a more of a primary with different Republican candidates. I'm sure there are Republicans who are opposed to, you know, uranium mining in the Grand Canyon and are interested in preserving our biggest source of income here, which is really tourism.
Well, you know, we keep talking about Republicans and Democrats, and the bottom line is that there's extremes in both parties. And the idea here is to find those 65-70% of people that are rational within both parties and say, you know, we can do better if we work together. You know, you can have your values and you can have your values, but here are the 5 or 7 or 10 issues that we have to resolve. Let us find a way to resolve these issues together. Because it's true. I haven't been in a process in life where if you don't work together, you succeed. You must work together to succeed. And that's one of the biggest problems our government's having today. We are fighting political battles instead of solution-oriented processes.
Well, politically, having you down there and a few more D's and I's to battle the R's, I think whether, once again, speaking strict, forget about rational, speaking just politically, they will have to work together. There will be more cooperation and less divisiveness if they don't have such a majority down there.
Yeah, I got a call from somebody from your opponent's campaign asking if I was going to vote for yesterday. And
we often ridicule, not enough, by the way, Sylvia Allen on this show.
I mean, I wish more Republicans would call me. I think one thing, if you're a registered Democrat, they stop talking to you. All right, we've got a postcard in front of us, and when I was talking to voters this weekend, I got two things. One, a fellow said, when I lived back east, I was a Republican. He said, I moved out here to Arizona, now I'm an independent, because I can't be in that Arizona Republican Party. So the other thing is that the people complained about the most was these attack ads at all levels, and whether they're a postcard like the one sitting in front of us or some expensive television commercial by some group that just got made up yesterday and is funded by sources that you don't know.
Well, that's it. Down at the coffee shop, they say, this is what they say. They say, complaining about the attack ads, they say, tell us what you can do. Don't tell us what the other, you know, how evil the other guy is. And quite frankly, I think in this show so far anyway, I've been listening, I've had my coffee shop buddies, who are a lot of ex-cops, by the way, in the back of my head, saying, and Tom has done, I think, a good job in the last 45 minutes of telling us more or less what he's about. Not so much, although we do want to slap Sylvia Allen around here metaphorically.
Well, I think that everybody has a right to their views. But, you know, you don't have a right to, as Senator Moynihan once said, you don't have a right to your own facts.
That's right.
And these mailers that are coming out, one of the things that
how about the things they're saying about you, Tom, and this mailer?
Well, here's one that this mailer that you have here voted to maintain a $225 million property tax on Arizona residents. In 2000, I voted for that property tax in 2006. And it was a temporary property tax for a 3 or 4 year period. And it was money that people paid to the county. And we said, okay, we are having an influx of funds coming into the state. We need to get some money into the hands of our citizens. And so we said, the state will pay $225 million out of the general fund and relieve the citizens of the obligation to pay for this education tax, equalization tax to the county for a limited period of time. In 2008, a year before the limited time was up, people brought a proposal to the legislature and said, let us make this a permanent tax cut. Well, first of all, it wasn't a tax cut in the first place. It was a rebate program.
Right.
Secondly, 2008, if everybody remembers, was a time when the state and the country were falling apart economically.
Absolutely.
We didn't have $225 million. So I and others voted to not extend it at that time past 2010. We didn't say in 2009 you can't look at this again because the tax cut was still in, or whatever you want to call it, the rebate was still in effect. So in 2009, it comes along and they send it to the governor, the Republican governor, and said, we want this made permanent. And the Republican governor says, we don't have the money for this.
Yeah.
We can't make it permanent. And she vetoed the bill. And so the idea that I want to increase taxes on people, I cut taxes in this state 13 times. The biggest income tax cut in the history of Arizona. The biggest property tax cut for businesses in the history of Arizona. The biggest property tax cut for citizens in the history of Arizona. I could go on and on. And then we get into, I'm a liberal because of my voting record on immigration. Now, I'm sorry, but there were immigration bills I voted against. This one has opposed required voter ID at the polls. No, I didn't. As the Arizona Republic pointed out, I voted for some of the most stringent immigration bills in the country. But I did it in a way that I actually, as my obligation says, is to look at the Constitution to see if it fits into the Constitution. And so when I went through these bills the other day, my whole immigration record, because I said, this is crazy. And I found they're not lying here. I voted against these things.
Got it.
But when they say something of which record is clear, my daughter used the equation analogy of you have a picture, a digital picture, and that digital picture has pixels, as we all know. And so if you choose to take a section of pixels out or a few pixels out, it distorts the picture. And so that's what's going on with my record on immigration.
Yes.
I have 26 bills that I voted positively on immigration issues. They included English is the official language. They included securing our borders. They included employer sanctions. Why didn't I vote for employer sanctions the first time? It's because the entire business community of this state was up in arms that we were going to negatively impact businesses.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You've been listening to the business community. They were begging Jan Brewer not to sign 1070. Everyone, the chamber of everyone, because they knew what would happen, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, employer sanctions was a little bit different. What happened is in 2007, they had the employer sanctions bill, and it was a Christmas tree, we called it. It had everything on immigration in there. And the business community said, don't wrap us up in all that.
Right.
So I voted against it.
Right.
And the next year, we had a bill, and we said, okay, this has been worked on with the business community. It doesn't have all this Christmas tree stuff on it. So we will now vote on employer sanctions, and we voted on another bill for employer sanctions to clarify some of the rules and issues. That's what you can't look at just the pixel. You have to look at the full picture.
We're talking with Tom O'Halloran, who's running as an independent for the state Senate. He served before as in the state legislature, both as a representative and as a state senator, representing as a Republican. He's now running an independent. That's a change. For those of you who think we never have anybody who isn't a Democrat on the show, have proof, a real live independent here. I will say that actually we never really ask anybody what their party registration is.
That's true.
There is Democrats of the Red Rock is having a coffee and bagels meeting with Terry Goddard this Wednesday morning. I think it's about 8 o'clock. Candidate for Secretary of State. Terry Goddard, really interesting man, has a lot of important, interesting things to say about this flood of dark money pouring into campaigns here. We saw how vicious it was in the Republican campaign primary, and now we're seeing how it's affecting the general election. We want to thank Tom O'Halloran for being here today. Mike, you got a closing idea?
I have no closing idea except to vote for Tom O'Halloran. I haven't talked about voting for anybody other than a Democrat in a long, long time, but he's got liberal next to his name, so it must be okay. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.